I want to get back to the series that we've been on for a while, in Suffering and Deliverance, after a couple of weeks break. And if you remember, we've been going through the Old Testament in the Deliverance part of this study, starting in the beginning and going right on through the Bible and seeing all of the Old Testament saints that God delivered from various afflictions that they were dealing with, or troubles that they were facing. And a couple of weeks ago in this study, we were looking at David and Goliath. And we're still going to be talking about David, because David had a lot of different suffering in his life. He had a lot of troubles. And it was just pretty much right after the episode with Goliath that more trouble started for David, and that was with Saul. We're going to look at that for the next couple of weeks, because Saul tried to kill David 11 different times, as we'll look at, and I can't cover them all in 1 week, so we're going to do it in two. But you know about Saul, I'm sure. Saul was the king of Israel. Just one verse to show you when Saul became king here in 1 Samuel 10 and verse 24. It says, "And Samuel said to all the people, see ye him whom the Lord hath chosen." And you can look back in a few verses, he's talking about Saul. "That there is none like him among all the people." And it's true, he was literally head and shoulders above the crowd. He was far taller than the rest of them, as it says there in the previous verse. "And all the people shouted and said, God save the king." So it's interesting that they were all about Saul when Saul was ordained king. But it didn't take long for their affections to turn to somebody else that was a little more impressive than Saul. And we'll see that. And we'll see that this caused Saul a lot of trouble and envy. If you turn over to 1 Samuel 18, verses 6 through 9, this is right after David had killed Goliath. And David started to go with Saul. Saul made him a commander, and he went out to war with him. And it says there in verse 5, 1 Samuel 18 and verse 5, it says, "And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants." Which this is pretty impressive, really, because you remember David was only maybe 16, 17, maybe 18. He was a young kid at this time, and Saul set him over the military at this young age. But David was wise. See, a lot of people, that would go right to their head, but not David. He behaved himself wisely. Well, then in verse 6, it says, "It came to pass, as they came, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistine." And I tend to think that that's referring to Goliath. It doesn't say the Philistines. It said the Philistine, referring to Goliath. So this is probably right after David had slew Goliath. Verse 5 was just talking about what is happening in general, but this appears to be going back right after the time when David had slew Goliath. It says there that the women came out of all cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tabrets, with joy, and with instruments of music. And the women answered one another as they played and said, "Saul hath slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very wroth, and the saying displeased him. And he said, "They have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom?" And Saul eyed David from that day and forward. You can imagine, if you were in Saul's shoes, here you are the king, and here's this young kid, and he's done a great feat. And now he comes back from the battle, and all these women are singing and praising, and they're saying that Saul has slain his thousands, David his 10,000s. So they are much more impressed with David than they are with Saul. I was thinking about that this morning, and I just realized that how foolish this was of these women to do that. Even if they really did think that, why would you do that? Why would you praise publicly some young kid when your king is standing there and ascribe to the kid, you know, the much higher accolades than the king? That's just not a good idea. A lot of people would probably lose their head for doing something like that. But the problem was, these women really weren't thinking. And if you think about what's going on here, and this is just something to be aware of, this is what happens when you get in crowds and you get music going on. When you get into crowds with music, people lose their minds. People lose their minds at concerts. People lose their minds at parties. crowds, and music. And these women, just rationality and logic goes right out the window, and they start saying, and this is, who knows if it was even true, that David had slain his 10,000s. David was just getting started here, so more than likely he had not slain more than Saul anyway, but this is what the women were saying. So just a little warning to you there. Beware of crowds, and beware of crowds with music, especially with rock music or, you know, that kind of stuff. If you want to get together with a crowd and listen to classical music, chances are there's not going to be any riots. You start listening to rock and roll in a crowd, yeah, probably bad things are going to happen. So David was envied of Saul here. And I mean, I think anybody can probably understand why Saul would feel that way. Not that it was right, but he kept his eye on David from that point forward. That's pretty much all it took. And because of this envy, God sent an evil spirit into Saul. This is the danger with envy. You know, it says in Proverbs that anger is cruel and wrath is cruel and anger is outrageous. But who can stand before envy? Envy is a really bad thing because envy is way worse than jealousy. Jealousy, you might want something that somebody has. Envy, you hate somebody for what they have that you don't have. There's a big difference. And so envy is a very dangerous thing. And God, look at the judgment here that God gave Saul for this envy. Verse 10, and it came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied in the midst of the house. And David played with his hand as at other times, and there was a javelin in Saul's hand. It's a dangerous man that's possessed of the devil and has a weapon in his hand. He's got the javelin. He's possessed of an evil spirit from the Lord. You say, well, how can the Lord send an evil spirit? Was it? No, this isn't a section of the outline that's coming that I was just working on this week. I was thinking I already preached it and I didn't. But you will remember Micaiah and Ahab. Ahab and Jehoshaphat wanted to go up to war with Ramoth Gilead. Ahab did, and he got Jehoshaphat to go with him. Jehoshaphat wants to get some counsel from the prophets. And these 400 prophets come out and tell him to go ahead. The Lord will deliver him into your hand. If you don't remember the story, we'll get to it here in a few weeks. But anyway, what was going on there, as Micaiah explained, is that the Lord wanted to deceive Ahab. And he says, how am I going to deceive him? And this evil spirit says, I'll go. I'll be a lying spirit in the mouth of his prophets. I'll deceive him for you. And the Lord said, go ahead. So the Lord can send a evil spirit to torment somebody, even one of his own children. And I believe that Saul was, because it says the Lord gave him another heart in another place. But the Lord can use an evil spirit, can allow an evil spirit to go and torment people, even his own children, if they have sin in their hearts and God wants to punish them by way of that evil spirit. And this is what happened here with Saul. So this would have been something where David would have wanted to keep his guard up. Because Saul's got the javelin in his hand. And I was thinking about this. I mean, you can imagine if I could play an instrument and I can't. And for some reason, Joe Biden invites me over to the Oval Office to play an instrument for him because he's a little troubled. And I walk in and old Joe's got a Glock in his hand and he wants me to play him the guitar. I might be a little bit apprehensive about this and wonder what's going on. So I am imagining when David saw the javelin in Saul's hand, he was probably paying attention, as he should have been. But anyway, back to this envy thing before we get to that. You want to be really careful with this, because this same thing can happen to you. Any one of us can have envy in our hearts. And it says in the book of James that the spirit within us lusteth to envy. This is a universal human condition. And when this happens, what can happen is God can turn you over to a delusion like he did to Saul. If we let envy or pride or bitterness or resentment or something like that, some heart sin like that, if we let it build up within us, God will turn us over to a delusion and cause us to lose our minds and turn on our brethren. And this is exactly what happened to Saul, and this can happen to any one of us. You've got to be really careful with resentment and bitterness. If you turn over to Hebrews chapter 12, just to give you a verse to substantiate what I'm saying, in Hebrews chapter 12, 14 through 15, it says, follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and look at the rest of the verse, and thereby many be defiled. You see, a root of bitterness doesn't just defile the person that's bitter. It springs up, it begins as a root, which is underground, which you don't even see, then it springs up, and it comes out, and many are defiled. So you want to be really careful of this, and what causes these things is those heart sins, like pride, envy, bitterness, resentment, things like that. I've witnessed this happen. I've been a victim of this in another church, and I've told you about that before. But I found out after the fact, after it was too late, I found out that there was somebody, at least one person in that church, that had a lot of resentment built up towards me over some things that I had preached, but I had no idea. I knew that I could perceive that something was wrong, something had changed, and I even talked to the person about it directly, and the person denied it, and I thought it was something, probably something else was causing it, and when I offered that explanation, she just kind of went along with it, but that wasn't really what was going on. She didn't tell me what the truth was. And eventually, that resentment ended up defiling many. I believe, anyway. I mean, I think that's pretty clear as to part of the contributing factor, which is part of the contributing factor of what happened up there. So anyway, just be very, very careful about allowing envy or bitterness or resentment to build up against somebody. If that happens, you need to do one of two things. You either need to deal with that in your own heart and get rid of it, and you can do that, or if it's just something that just keeps eating at you and you just can't let it go, talk to the other person about it. And I've done this. I've done this. It's not easy, but just talk it out with another person and just tell them, I'm upset because of this, or I don't like what you did here, or I feel whatever, that you hurt me in some way, or whatever the problem is. And talk it out with a person, and you'll feel, chances are, if the person's a reasonable person, you'll feel a lot better, and that person will know things that he or she didn't know because they were all stuck in your heart. They were tearing you up, but this person didn't even know about it in many cases. So deal with those things with the person before the Lord sends an evil spirit into your heart and you end up being a madman like Saul and setting out to try to kill the person that you hate because you're envious of him. All right, so Saul tried to kill David 11 times. I mean, when at first you don't succeed, try again, as the old saying goes. 11 times, that was pretty impressive, I guess. I mean, the man definitely had some stamina, that's for sure. So the first two times, Saul threw a javelin at David, tried to kill him when he was playing the harp. We saw there in verse 10 that David was playing before him as at other times, and Saul had a javelin in his hand. And then verse 11, it says, and Saul cast the javelin, for he said, I will smite David even to the wall with it. And David avoided out of his presence twice. Twice. You know, there's an old saying that says, hit me with a javelin once, shame on you. Hit me with a javelin twice, shame on me. Actually, I made that up, but you know the saying that I'm referring to, of course. David was probably paying attention the first time when he saw the javelin in his hand. After it was chucked at him the first time, you better bet when he was playing that harp, he was watching Saul the whole time. You can't trust the guy that's throwing a javelin at you. I mean, I certainly wouldn't. You know, Jesus said, forgive 70 times 7. You forgive, but you can keep your eye on a guy that's got a javelin in his hand, even if he does say you're sorry. So David escaped out of his hand, out of his attempt to murder him there twice. And David behaved himself very wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him, verses 12 through 14. And Saul was afraid of David. This is interesting. Saul's the king. Saul's a great big a man's man, right? And he's afraid of David. He's afraid of this little kid, you know, 17, 18-year-old kid. Why is he afraid of him? Not because David could probably physically harm him. Saul could probably hold his own. He's afraid of him because David is wise and the Lord is with David. That's what he's afraid of. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him. and he was departed from Saul. Therefore Saul removed him from him and made him his captain over 1,000, and he went out and came in before the people. Now it's interesting, this kind of thing happens in corporate America all the time. When somebody has an employee that they have trouble with and that they don't like, instead of firing him, they promote him and get rid of him and make him somebody else's problem. That happens all the time. You know, the biggest turds float to the top. But anyway, this was not the case with David, but Saul did want to get rid of him, so he promoted him just to get him out of his sight. Give him command over 1,000 men, and then I won't have to look at the guy anymore. And David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. This is about the second or third time at least that it says that David behaved himself wisely, and it'll go on to say it again. This was a man, a young man, that sought the Lord from his youth and clearly had wisdom beyond his years. This is not typical behavior of a kid in his late teens, that's for sure. This made Saul very afraid of David. Verse 15. Wherefore, when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him. See, the more David is persecuted, the more wisely he behaves. Because you got to do that. When somebody is eyeing you, and when they've got their eye on you, you better behave very wisely. Because they're watching. Just like they watched the Lord Jesus Christ. They watched him, it said. They waited and tried to catch something out of his mouth. You got to be really careful when you have enemies. Watch what you say. Watch what you do, because they're paying very close attention. But this made Saul even more afraid. You see, wicked men are not afraid of fools, but they're afraid of the wise. You don't need to be afraid of a fool. A fool will destroy himself. A fool will make a dumb decision and mess it up for himself. But a wise man, you got to be afraid of, especially if you're a wicked man and the Lord's with that wise man. So Saul's first two attempts to kill David were unsuccessful. Then he tries a third time. He tried to set David up to be killed by the Philistines. He devised this scheme where he would give his daughter, her name was Merab, give his daughter to David for a wife on the condition that he would go fight for him and hopefully the Philistines would kill him. This wasn't a bad idea, you know, because if there's one thing that young men like, it's women, and you offer him your daughter and say, all you have to do is just go fight the Philistines for me. You know, young men are valiant, they're strong. He'll go out there and fight, and chances are he'll die. Kind of like what David did later to Uriah. You remember Uriah? To get rid of Uriah, he sent him up to the front line and then withdrew from him so that the enemy would kill him and it would look like it was, you know, it just happened. It was just bad fortune, but of course it was intentional. So this was Saul's scheme. 1 Samuel 18, verses 17 and 18. And Saul said to David, behold, my elder daughter Merab, her will I give thee to wife. Only be thou valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles. For Saul said, let not mine hand be upon him, but let the hand of the Philistines be upon him. Saul doesn't want to kill him. Apparently he's had a change of heart because he just tried with the javelins. But he doesn't want to kill him. He doesn't want to make it too obvious. He wants the Philistines to kill him. And of course he does so under a guise of piousness, doesn't he? Look at what he says there. He says, go fight the Lord's battles. He wants David to think he's doing the Lord's work here when he's really doing Saul's work, which is really a work that's trying to kill David. A lot of wicked people use the Lord's name in vain to try to convince people to do things they want them to do. How many presidents have we had that say, God bless America, and in their private and personal lives certainly don't obey or believe in the God of the Bible? They all do that. Well, Merab was given to another man, so Saul offered a different daughter, Michal. I've heard her name pronounced Michael. There's no pronunciation here. With Merab, there's actually pronunciation marks. In my Bible, anyway, there's no pronunciation marks there. I'm going to call her Michal, because Michael just sounds weird for a girl. So I'm going to call her Michal if I can remember to. Unless, you know, somebody can tell me the proper pronunciation. So anyway, Saul decides to give Michal to David for the same reason. He can use her to get him to do something that will probably end up in his death. verses 19 through 24. But it came to pass, at the time when Merab, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, that she was given to Adriel, the Mehololite, to wife. And Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. And they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. And Saul said, I will give her him, that she may be a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Wherefore Saul said to David, Thou shalt this day be my son-in-law in the one of the twain. And Saul commanded his servants, saying, Commune with David secretly, and say, Behold, the king hath delight in thee, and all his servants love thee. Now therefore be the king's son-in-law. And Saul's servants spake those words in the ears of David. And David said, Seemeth it to you a light thing to be the king's son-in-law, seeing that I am a poor man and lightly esteemed? And the servants of Saul told him, saying, On this manner spake David. So David, because he was a humble man, didn't think that he was worthy. He came from a poor family. He wasn't nobility or didn't have high rank or anything like that in his family. He didn't feel like he was worthy to marry the king's daughter. And furthermore, he should have been skeptical of the guy that's trying to kill him. Now is trying to pass off his daughters onto you. Why would that be? So, there have been people in the past that didn't want to marry the pastor's daughter because they were afraid to marry the pastor's daughter because, he's the pastor's daughter. When the pastor's really trying to push his daughter on you or something, you might want to wonder, like, well, maybe he's trying to pull a Saul on me or something, but you never know. So Saul told David that he wanted him to give him 100 Philistine foreskins for a Michal with hopes that he would die in battle with him. In other words, he wants David to go out to kill 100 Philistines and circumcise them and bring the foreskins back, which is pretty disgusting if you think about it. Verses 25 and 26, And Saul said, Thus shall ye say to David, The king desireth not any dowry, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines, to be avenged of the king's enemies. But Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. See, this is classic deception. You tell somebody one thing, but you really mean another. You have ulterior motives. This is what Saul was doing here. He doesn't want the Philistines avenged, and he doesn't need to have 100 Philistines killed because they're the king's enemies. Yeah, that's half true, but what he really wants is David killed. Verse 26, And when his servants told David these words, it pleased David well to be the king's son-in-law, and the days were not expired. So David goes out, and he does even better. Saul wants 100 foreskins. He goes out, and he kills 200 Philistines and brings them back 200 foreskins. Verse 27, Wherefore David arose and went, he and his men, and slew of the Philistines 200 men, and David brought their foreskins, and they gave them in full tale to the king, that he might be the king's son-in-law, and Saul gave him Michal, his daughter, to wife. At least Saul was true to his word. But David comes back and gives these foreskins in full tale. It means he literally counted them out. 1, 2, 3, whole way to 200. I mean, how disgusting is that? But that's what he did. I mean, a young man will do a lot for love, let me tell you what. Wow. I thought I had to do a lot to get my wife to go over there to another country and go through all that rigmarole. And I wasn't performing 200 circumcisions, I can tell you that much. Wow. So Saul could see that the Lord was with David, and this made him even more afraid of David, and he caused him to be his enemy continually. Verses 28 through 29. And Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. And Saul was yet the more afraid of David, and Saul became David's enemy continually. This is a bad place to be. When you have somebody that can think of nothing else but how they want you dead or how they hate you. This is Saul. All Saul could think about was how he was going to get rid of David. He was his enemy continually. But remember, he didn't act like his enemy. David probably perceived it, but it wasn't openly apparent. Probably nobody else realized that Saul hated David. So because of this, David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul. Verse 30, then the princes of the Philistines went forth, and it came to pass after they went forth that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name was much set by. You see, when you're dealing with enemies, you must behave very wisely, as I said before. So this was Saul's third attempt to kill David, this time kind of in a roundabout way, hoping that he would end up dying in battle. But that didn't work, so he tries a fourth time to kill David. He tries to talk his son Jonathan and his servants into killing David. In chapter 19, in verse 1, it says, "And Saul spake to Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should kill David." See, now it's starting to come out. Right before, far as I can tell, it's all in Saul's heart. Saul wants to kill him. Saul throws a javelin at him twice. Saul comes up with a scheme to give him one daughter so he'll die. That doesn't work out. He gives him another daughter, tells him go get 100 Philistines. It's all kept inside, but now it comes out. Now he just straight up asks his son and his servants to kill David. Well, Jonathan loved David, and therefore he told him to hide himself while he went and tried to persuade Saul not to kill him. Verses 2 through 3. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. There's another place where it says that David said that his love toward Jonathan was like the love of women, or greater than the love of women. He loved him as a friend. These two were as close of friends as you could get. He loved him like his own soul, it says in another place. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. And Jonathan told David, saying, "Saul, my father, seeketh to kill thee. Now therefore, I pray thee, take heed to thyself until the morning, and abide in a secret place, and hide thyself. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where thou art, and I will commune with my father of thee, and what I see, that I will tell thee." Now this is commendable, because in Jonathan's case, blood doesn't run thicker than water. You know, with most people, blood runs thicker than water. They'll choose their family over what is right. A lot of people will do that. But you shouldn't do that. You should always choose what's right. Family comes second to God. Family comes second to what is right. And if your family member is doing something wrong, well, you got to stand up against that. And this is what Jonathan did. Jonathan reasoned with Saul, and he dissuaded him from killing David. So at this point, even though Saul's possessed of an evil spirit, and Saul is David's enemy continually, and Saul is, he's mad. And I mean mad in the sense of crazy. Like, he's lost his mind. But he's not far enough gone yet that he can't be reasoned with. Jonathan reasoned with him and was able to actually change his mind. 1 Samuel 19, verses 4 through 6. "And Jonathan spake good of David unto Saul his father, and said unto him, Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he hath not sinned against thee, and because his words have been to thee word very good. So he did put his life in his hand and slew the Philistine. And the Lord wrought a great salvation for all Israel. Thou sawest it and didst rejoice. Wherefore then wilt thou sin against innocent blood and slay David without a cause?" Verse 6, "And Saul hearkened unto the voice of Jonathan, and Saul sware, as the Lord liveth, he shall not be slain." Now Saul broke that oath that he made there. It's like Pharaoh, when Pharaoh said numerous times he'd let the people go, and then he changes his mind. Well, same thing happened with Saul. But Jonathan is reasoning with Saul here, and he reasons with him that, hey, David hasn't sinned against you. Why are you going to sin against him? Why would you do this to him? You know, it says there in Proverbs 3 and verse 30 that we are to strive not with a man without cause if he have done thee no harm. Why would you start a fight with somebody that hasn't done anything to you? What Jonathan doesn't realize is that Saul has been offended by David. He's envious of David because the women are more impressed with David than they are with Saul. But that's not a reason to kill him. Jonathan doesn't probably understand why Saul's trying to kill him. And here's another one, just at the end of verse 5, just another point that you might want to keep in the back of your mind. He says, "Wherefore then wilt thou sin against innocent blood to slay David without a cause?" Remember what it says there in what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5? He said, "He that is angry with his brother without a cause is in danger of the judgment." Well, without a cause is clearly without a just cause. Because Saul had a cause. His cause was his envy. Well, that's not a just cause. That's not a good cause. He wanted to slay him without a good cause. And that's what Jesus is saying there too. If you're angry without your brother, if you're angry against your brother without a just cause, you're in danger of the judgment. Because Jesus himself was angry with his brethren, the Jews, but with a just cause, of course. So David was again able to be in Saul's presence in peace, and he escaped death. Again, verse 7. And Jonathan called David, and Jonathan showed him all those things, and Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in times past. So things are back to normal for a while. But you know, if I was David, and I'm sure he did, you kind of keep your eye on Saul. Even though things are kind of back to normal, so it looks, you always want to be a little bit wary of a guy that's tried to kill you four or five times. You might not want to turn your back on him. So Saul tries to kill him again, this time with a javelin. You know, you may as well try it again. Isn't that the definition of insanity? Repeating the same experiment again, hoping for different results. David went out to war with the Philistines, and he slew them in a great slaughter there in verse 8. And there was war again, and David went out and fought with the Philistines and slew them with a great slaughter, and they fled from him. And this made Saul envious, because now David is being successful again in battle. And the evil spirit enters him again, and he entices him to kill David as he played for him. So it appears that the evil spirit departed from Saul. When Saul repented, when Jonathan reasoned with him, the evil spirit must have left. The Lord delivered him from that. You know, it says that that a man of God must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, in meekness instructing them that oppose themselves, if God peradventure would give him repentance to the acknowledging of the truth. And this is an example of that. Jonathan instructed Saul in meekness. God gave Saul repentance to the acknowledging of the truth, and the evil spirit departed from Saul for a while. Well, then Saul gets envious again of David, and the evil spirit comes back. Verse 9. And the evil spirit from the Lord was upon Saul, and he sat in his house with his javelin in his hand, and David played with his hand. No, it doesn't say the evil spirit left him. It could be possible that the evil spirit just was still with him and in him and just wasn't bothering him. I don't know. But anyway, it appears that that influence of that evil spirit subsided for a while until Saul's envy came back and then the evil spirit comes back. So David ends up dodging this javelin and he flees from Saul and escapes. Verse 10. And Saul sought to smite David even to the wall with the javelin, but he slipped away out of Saul's presence, and he smote the javelin into the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. Saul was keeping his maintenance guy busy with all these holes in the wall from this javelin. So that one was unsuccessful, so Saul tries another way. He sends messengers to David's house to watch him and kill him. Figures if he can't do it, he'll get somebody else to do it. Set a watch there, set up kind of some surveillance, wait for him to come in for the opportune time, take him out. Well, David's wife, Michal, warned him of this conspiracy, and she let him down through a window, and he escaped. 1 Samuel 19, verses 11 and 12. Saul also sent messengers unto David's house to watch him and to slay him in the morning. And Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, "If thou save not thy life tonight, tomorrow thou shalt be slain." So Michal let David down through a window, and he went and fled and escaped. Once again, Michal, like her brother Jonathan was esteeming water thicker than blood. That was her husband, after all, but she was going against the will of her father, the king, to save her husband and an innocent man. So Michal puts this image under the covers in David's bed, and she makes it look like he's sick and he's lying in bed to deceive the men. This is pretty clever. Verses 13 through 17. And Michal took an image and laid it in the bed and put a pillow of goat's hair for his bolster and covered it with a cloth. And when David, when Saul sent messengers to take David, she said, "He is sick." That's what you call a righteous lie. She was lying to save life. And there's nothing wrong, actually, with lying to save life. Rahab, the harlot, lied to save the spies. Remember the Israelite spies that came to her when she was in Jericho, when they were scoping out that city? And the men of Jericho came, and they wanted to know if they heard that the spies were in her house, and they asked about the spies, and she says they went that way. She flat out lied to their face. And guess what she's called in Hebrews chapter 11? A woman of faith. By faith, Rahab sent them out another way. By faith, literally by faith, Rahab lied. That was a faithful lie right there. And there's nothing wrong with lying to save life. You don't lie to save your butt when you cheat on a test or when you, you know, do something you're not supposed to. But to lie to save somebody else's life is perfectly acceptable with God, because God esteems the preservation of life over lying. And furthermore, the lying that God's really concerned about with is in the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. You're not bearing false witness against a criminal that's trying to kill somebody else by telling them that that other person is not there. You're not bearing false witness against that person when you do so. You are helping save the life of somebody. Bearing false witness against somebody is lying about that person to get them in trouble. To say, hey, this guy did something wrong, and testifying against him, and he ends up being punished for something that he didn't do. That's bearing false witness against somebody. So anyway, she says he's sick. In verse 15, and David sent the messengers, I'm sorry, Saul. And Saul sent the messengers again to see David, saying, "Bring him up to me in the bed that I may slay him." These guys are obviously pretty gullible. They come in and she says, "Oh, he's sick." And they're like, "Oh, okay, we'll go home. We'll come back and kill him later." What? You're supposed to kill him. Like, I mean, what's the matter if he's sick? It'd be easier to kill that way. But anyway, they go, "Oh, hey, Saul, he's sick. We can kill him." So he says, "Go back and get him. Kill him. What are you doing?" Verse 16, "And when the messengers were come in, behold, there was an image in the bed with a pillow of goat's hair for his bolster. And Saul said unto Michal, Why hast thou deceived me so and sent away mine enemy, that he is escaped? And Michal answered Saul, He said unto me, Let me go. Why should I kill thee?" She just lied again. David didn't say that at all. David didn't threaten to kill her. But she is now saving her own life. And that's all right too. She didn't do anything worthy of death. She's not trying to cover up sin. She's trying to cover up the fact that she was trying to save somebody's life. So she throws David under the bus. Well, he said he was going to kill me if I didn't lie about it and hide him. So she deceives her own father. God again delivered David out of Saul's hand. Verse 18. So David fled and escaped and came to Samuel, to Ramah, and told him all that Saul had done to him. And he and Samuel went and dwelt in Naioth. Now, it doesn't really say anything about how Samuel felt, but if you think about it, Samuel loved Saul. When Saul was finally deposed, when Saul, well, first of all, he made the offering. He made the offering that the priest was supposed to offer. He didn't want to wait, couldn't wait for Samuel. And he took the kingdom from him. And then when Saul didn't kill all the Amalekites, when he saved the king and he saved the best of the beasts that he was supposed to kill, so Samuel had to go there and tell Saul that he'd lost the kingdom. And Samuel was grieving over Saul. And the Lord had to tell Samuel, quit grieving over Saul. Like, Samuel really loved this guy. Well, you can imagine how Samuel must have felt when David comes back to him and says, "You're not going to believe this. Saul's tried to kill me like 5 or 6 times now. He threw a javelin at me 3 times. He tried to get me killed by going out and killing these Philistines, and he tried to get Jonathan to kill me, and Jonathan talked him out of it, and now he tries to get his men to kill me, he's watching my house. I mean, I can just imagine how Samuel must have felt to hear all this terrible news about Saul. See, David knew that he was about one step away from death. We're going to jump down a little bit just to verse 3 of chapter 20. It says, And David sware moreover and said, Thy father certainly knoweth that I have found grace in thine eyes. He's talking here to Jonathan, I believe. And he said, let not Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. No, he's talking to somebody else. Anyway, but truly as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, there is but one step between me and death. He knows he's just a step away from death. And, you know, that would make it kind of hard to sleep at night, wouldn't it? Make you a little bit anxious and nervous to know that, you know, tomorrow could be your last. That was the position that David was in. Now, just kind of remember that. When you read through some of the Psalms and you read about David talking about his enemies and how they surrounded him and how he's begging to God for mercy and for help, that's why. He's one step away from death at any time. And we're not through. Saul's only tried to kill him. How many times has he tried to kill him now? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 times. That's just over half. He's still got a whole lot more to come. And we'll look at one more. So now Saul decides to pursue David with his servants. So Saul's going to take matters into his own hands because his servants weren't getting the job done without the leader there. So he decides that he's going to try to kill David. He had decreed that David would surely die there in 1 Samuel 20 and verse 31. It says, For as long as the son of Jesse liveth upon the ground, that's David, thou shalt not be established nor thy kingdom. Wherefore now send and fetch him unto me, for he shall surely die. So Saul is determined. He's going to kill David, one way or another. So David goes to Ahimelech, the priest, and he lied to him, saying that he was on official business from the king in order to get some bread for the young men that were with him and to get himself a weapon. He ended up getting Goliath's sword. Let's read 1 Samuel chapter 21, starting in verse 1. We're going to go down to verse 9. Then came David to Nob, to Ahimelech the priest, and Ahimelech was afraid at the meeting of David, and said unto him, Why art thou alone, and no man with thee? And David said unto Ahimelech the priest, The king hath commanded me a business, and hath said unto me, Let no man know anything of the business whereabout I send thee, and what I have commanded thee, and I have appointed my servants to such and such a place. Well, here is the third lie that we're seeing here in this account. Saul hadn't sent him on a special business. He's running from Saul for his life. He just lied. Now, is David wrong to lie? Well, he is doing so to save his own innocent life. He's done nothing worthy of death. This is what you call godly deception. And, Jesus cited this account here of Ahimelech giving him the showbread, and David lied to get it, basically. And Jesus certainly never condemned him for that. Now, I'm not encouraging you to lie. But to lie to save your life when somebody is persecuting you and trying to kill you, or to lie to save somebody else's life is another story. I'm not telling you it's okay to lie just in general, so don't misunderstand me. Verse 3, Now therefore, what is under thine hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread in thine hand, and or what there is present. And the priest answered David and said, There is no common bread under mine hand, but there is hallowed bread, if the men have kept themselves at least from women. Apparently, at first, he thought that David was by himself because he says, Why are you here alone? And now he talks about the men that are with David. So obviously, David must have showed him that he had some other young men with him, apparently, told him. So he says that he doesn't have any common bread, like just bread there for eating. He's got the hallowed bread, the show bread that was consecrated for the Lord's use. And he says, I can share it with you, although it was not, it was against the law to do that. Nobody was supposed to eat that bread but the priest. But once again, the preservation of human life trumps some of the other lower laws of God. God had a law that said only the priest could eat the show bread, but God also has a law that says human life is to be maintained and held in high esteem. So this was acceptable, and Jesus quoted this very passage, saying that it was not lawful for the priest to give him the bread, but it was okay for him to do that in this case, to save life. Just like it was okay for Jesus to heal on the Sabbath. When you're not technically supposed to do any work on the Sabbath, Jesus uses this as an example to show that it was okay for him to heal on the Sabbath, because to heal and to save life trumps the Sabbath law. You see, God's laws are set up in a hierarchy. One, some of them are more important in God's estimation than others. And David answered the priest and said unto him, "Of a truth, women have been kept from us about these 3 days since I came out, and the vessels of the young men are holy, and the bread is in a manner common, yea, though it were sanctified this day in the vessel." So the priest gave him hallowed bread, for there was no bread there but the show bread that was taken from before the Lord, to put hot bread in the day when it was taken away. Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg, an Edomite, the chiefest of the herdmen that belonged to Saul. Let me tell you what, just simply a guy that's named Doeg should put your antenna up. You hear a guy named Doeg, that just sounds like a bad name to me. This guy is no good, and we're going to see that later on in this story. And David said unto Ahimelech, "And is there not here under thine hand spear or sword? For I have neither brought my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste." There's a fourth lie. Fourth lie. The king's business didn't require haste. There was no king's business. He didn't have a sword or spear with him because he just wasn't able to get one before he fled from the king. But once again, he was okay because he's trying to preserve his life. And the priest said, "The sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom thou slewest in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here, wrapped in a cloth, behind the ephod. If thou wilt take it, take it. For there is no other save that here." And David said, "There is none like that. Give it me." And there was that thing. I mean, you can imagine how big that sword was. That would be a pretty hard thing to wield. But there was none like that, so David took it. You got to take what you can have. It's kind of like if you show up and you need to have a, ask somebody if you can borrow a handgun and they hand you a Desert Eagle or something. Okay, I mean, I'll take it. I'm going to end up having a hip replacement surgery here after I carry it for a couple of days, but I'll take it. Now, this is a side note, and you'll understand why I say this here in a few minutes when we get through this passage. That priest should have had more than one sword in the temple, or wherever he, in the, whatever, I don't know if it was the actual temple, but wherever he was anyway, he should have had more than one sword. Because what happened was, old Doeg comes back and ends up killing all the priests but one. One escapes. They didn't have any weapons to defend themselves. So yeah, good idea to have some guns in the church assembly just in case, right? You don't want it to happen to you like what happened to Ahimelech there. So David next goes to Achish, king of Gath, to find refuge, but the men recognized him. This made David afraid, so he feigns himself a madman in order to be delivered out of the hand of Achish. Verses 10 through 15. And David arose and fled that day for fear of Saul, and went to Achish, the king of Gath. And the servants of Achish said unto him, "Is not this David the king of the land?" Interesting. He's not yet the king, but they consider him the king. I guess it's because he's got such a reputation that maybe they thought that he was. "Did they not sing one to another of him in dances, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s?" Boy, isn't it interesting how word gets around. I mean, even the dances and the singing of these women, that really made its way around the area there. And David laid up these words in his heart and was sore afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. And he changed his behavior before them and feigned himself mad in their hands and scrabbled on the doors of the gate and let his spittle fall down upon his beard. Then said Achish unto his servants, Lo, ye see, the man is mad. Wherefore, then, have ye brought him to me? Have I need of madmen, that ye have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house? Now, this was another episode of godly deception. David makes himself look crazy. I mean, I'm not going to reenact it for you because that'd be disgusting, but he was like spitting on himself, like spits running down his beard, and he's slobbering on himself, and he's scrabbling on the doors, and he's acting like he's crazy. And the king says, well, I don't need that around here. So apparently David was a pretty good actor because he really thought he was crazy. Thought he got out of the insane asylum. So once again, you know, that was an act of deception, but godly deception. There's, you know, David wasn't censured for that. It was pretty clever, really. So then David goes to the cave of Adullam. And he gets there, this band of about 400 misfits who were in distress and debt and discontented. I think that's pretty interesting. Verses 1 through 2. Talk about, it sounds like the Taliban army here or something to me. A bunch of guys you probably really wouldn't want behind you. But anyway, chapter 22, verses 1 and 2. David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him. And every one that was in distress, and every one that was in debt, and every one that was discontented, gathered themselves unto him. And he became a captain over them, and there was with him about 400 men. And you know, actually, and I'm not disparaging soldiers, but you know, I was in the military, and I think a lot of you know that a lot of times the people that join the military do so because they're in distress. They don't know what else to do, right? There's something bad's happened in their life. They're in debt. They probably need a stable job, and they're discontented because they don't like the way their life is going. Now, some people do so for noble reasons, of course, but I met plenty of them that were there for those three reasons, or in my case, college money. You know, I was quite the patriot, wasn't I? But anyway, so he gets these guys, these 400 behind him. Interestingly enough, they were pretty loyal to him, even though they were kind of a shady bunch. And these include actually his brethren in his father's house, which is interesting because when he went to the battle, remember when they were fighting against Goliath? And he went out there to bring them food, and his brothers were upset that they accused him of just coming out here and wanting to see the battle. He just wanted some excitement. And they disparaged him. But now they're following him. Now they're with him. I think that's kind of interesting. So David went to Mizpah of Moab until the prophet told him to go down to Judah. Verses 3 through 5. And David went thence to Mizpah. That is Mizpah. There's a bar over the E. To Mizpah of Moab, and he said unto the king of Moab, Let my father and my mother, I pray thee, come forth and be with you, till I know what God will do for me. So his father and his mother and his brethren are all following him. And he brought them before the king of Moab, and they dwelt with him all the while that David was in the hold. Now it could be, it doesn't say this, I'm not aware of it anyway, but it could be that his parents and his brethren followed him because Saul is coming this way, and they don't want to be collateral damage, possibly, by being the family of David, and Saul's upset, so maybe just go with him. You'd be safer that way. I'm just speculating. I don't really know. Verse 5, And the prophet Gad said unto David, Abide not in the hold, depart, and get thee into the land of Judah. Then David departed and came to the forest of Hereth. So he's on the run. So when Saul heard that David was in Judah, he pursued after him with his servants, verses 6 through 8. When Saul heard that David was discovered, and the men that were with him, now Saul abode in Gibeah under a tree in Ramah, having his spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing about him. Then Saul said unto his servants that stood about him, Hear now, ye Benjamites, will the son of Jesse give every one of you the field, every one of you fields and vineyards, and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds? Is David going to give you fields? Is David going to give you land? Is he going to make you captains in the army? What's David have to give to you? I can give you all this stuff. I'm the king. You can have fields. You can have vineyards. I'll make you captains in the military. You don't want to follow David. You want to follow me. That all of you have conspired against me, and that there is none that showeth me that my son hath made a league with the son of Jesse, and there is none of you that is sorry for me, or showeth unto me that my son hath stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as at this day. So he's getting his servants riled up to go with him to pursue after David. So then Saul finds out that Ahimelech, the priest, had helped David, and he commanded Doeg to slay the priests. And this is a really sad thing. Verses 17 through 19, we're going to jump down a little bit here. And the king said unto the footmen that stood about him, Turn and slay the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not show it to me. But the servants of the king would not put forth their hand to fall upon the priests of the Lord. Now you think about this. The priests didn't know that David was on the run from Saul, right? David told them that he was on official business, and they gave him food and they gave him the sword. They didn't know that. Not to mention, Saul had no business killing them anyway. That was just wicked. But you think about it, these guys didn't do anything to deserve that. And yet, sometimes God allows bad things to happen to good people. John the Baptist got his head cut off because he condemned King Herod for taking his brother's wife. John didn't do anything wrong. Sometimes these things happen. You know, Herod killed James with the sword for no apparent reason. James didn't do anything. These priests ended up getting killed for no reason. This just shows you how insane Saul was as well. He is willing to kill the priests of the Lord because they sided with David, or because he thought they sided with David. He's just willing to murder them. This just shows you what envy will do to you. It will make you crazy to the point that you would do reprehensible things that you couldn't imagine that you would do. Verse 18, and the king said to Doeg, remember Doeg, he was the guy that was standing by there when David was talking to Ahimelech the priest, and Doeg was observing all this. David later on felt very bad about that because he saw Doeg observing all this, and he knew Doeg was a corrupt guy. And he didn't do anything, and he later felt bad about it and wished he would have. But hindsight's always 20/20, as they say. And the king, verse 18, and the king said to Doeg, Turn thou. See, the servants, his servants won't do it. They have enough sense not to kill the priest. So he turns to Doeg. Turn thou and fall upon the priest. And Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priest and fell on and slew on that day 85 persons that did wear a linen ephod. 85 priests he killed. What a horrible thing. Verse 19, and Nob, the city of the priests, smote he with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and sucklings, that's little babies, and oxen and asses and sheep with the edge of the sword. So Doeg, he's a yes man, he just goes, murders all these priests. And that's why I said those priests should have had more than the sword of Goliath in that temple or in that building. They should have been armed. That was very sad. And furthermore, I mean, how do you let one guy kill 85 of you? I mean, you just at least just pile on top of them. He can't kill you all. I don't know what they were doing. But anyway, that's too bad. Maybe Doeg got other people with him and he was just given the credit for it, and there were others. Sometimes, you know, one person is given the credit for it, but they had others to help them. I don't know. But anyway, a terribly sad thing. Now, here's what I just want you to draw your attention to this. It's interesting that Saul destroyed everything when he wanted to, but not when God told him to. You notice they go into this town and they kill men, women, children, sucklings, oxen, and asses, and sheep. They destroyed everything in that town. When it was in Saul's interest, or when it suited Saul's wrath to fulfill his lust, to destroy an entire town full of people and animals, he did it no problem. But when God told him to destroy the Amalekites, what did he do? He kept back the best of the animals because the people wanted him to. It just shows you that sometimes wicked people will be real zealous when it's in their own best interest. When it's something for them and not the Lord, oh yeah, I mean, they're going to go in there and they're just going to clean house. But when the Lord tells you flat out to do something, then it's like, well, you know, probably be better to save some of these animals to sacrifice. Just interesting how zealous some people can be when they're doing it for themselves versus what the Lord said. Now, Abiathar the priest escaped, and he told David what happened, and he joined with him. So it looks like there were 86 priests there, and only one of them got away. Doeg slew 85 of them. Verses 20 through 23. This will be the last passage for today. And one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar showed David that Saul had slain the Lord's priests. And David said unto Abiathar, I knew it that day when Doeg the Edomite was there, that he would surely tell Saul, I have occasioned the death of all the persons of thy father's house. Abide thou with me, fear not, for he that seeketh my life seeketh thy life, but with me thou shalt be in safeguard. David did something that's classic that a lot of people do, and that is when somebody dies, he blamed himself for it. David didn't know that Doeg was going to, I mean, certainly that he was going to kill the priest, that Saul was going to tell Doeg to kill the priest. He didn't know even for sure that Doeg was going to tell Saul, though he highly suspected it, but he didn't know that it was going to end up in the death of all the priests. But yet he blamed himself for all those priests' death. And that is so common. People do that all the time. Somebody dies and it's like, oh, but if I would have just done this, or if we'd have done this medical treatment or that treatment, or if I would have not allowed my child to go driving in the car with that person, he wouldn't have died in that car accident or whatever. I mean, people always blame themselves when somebody dies, and that's not a wise thing to do. Unless you are the actual reason why somebody died, like you pulled the trigger, or you gave somebody... You know, you through absolute gross negligence did something that occasioned somebody's death. Don't blame yourself for somebody else's death. That's just foolish. That doesn't make any sense because it's not your fault. But it's typical, and that's the way that David felt. But David took this guy under his wing and gave him his protection. So David once again was delivered out of Saul's hand, but this time there was a lot of collateral damage. Quite sad. So that was the seventh time, I believe, and we're going to cover the other, how many did I say there were? I guess four more next time. We're going to see how Saul continues to pursue David until eventually Saul gets killed. The Lord finally has enough of Saul, and he delivers, or he kills Saul and saves David. And then once we get to the end of this section, then we're going to go back through, and I'm going to give you the lessons learned. I'm going to point out a bunch of things that we can take home from all of these 11 times when the Lord delivered David out of Saul's hand.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.